The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
From WBME.
Hello, and welcome to episode 165, all about the Silmarillion, chapter 24 of The Voyage of Eärendil and the War of Wrath, being the 165th part of That's What I'm Talking About. My name is Mary Clay. If that's too complicated for you, just call me MC. I've been experiencing the world of J.R.R. Tolkien for the first time, and right now I'm reading the Silmarillion, so you don't have to. Today, I'm joined once again by Silmarimily from Tolkien Talk, here to redeem, not redeem herself, but defend the Silmarillion because she was handed the worst chapter ever. Emily, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I felt so bad when we finished recording because it was so apparent to me what a terrible chapter that infamous Realms of Beleriand is. And so many people were telling me too. They're like, you need to have her back on for a better chapter. So
I'm honored. I mean, I have such a deep love of the Silmarillion. So it was not hard for me from my perspective to defend it, but I can definitely see from everybody else's perspective why that is a very difficult chapter to defend the writing in.
I think we still had a great conversation about it. Yes. So yes. I think we did great, you know?
I was proud of myself that I managed to come out without too many battle wounds.
Yes. We won't be able to say the same for this chapter. Ooh.
I'm gonna foreshadowing.
You know, this is so exciting on so many levels. One, it's like kind of anticlimactic because it's like, ooh, it's the last chapter of the Silmarillion. Yeah. But then there are these two more sections left afterwards, which will have to be put on hold because of Rings of Power.
Yes.
Oh. Which you were part of this super cool exclusive group of amazing people who got to go to the screening. So we will maybe talk about that in a Patreon after show, listeners. if Emily has any tea to spill, no, there will be no tea spilling.
It was just very exciting. I was very, very glad to be there. I'm very excited to watch it all again.
I know. It's gotten me more excited, definitely. So I'm for sure looking forward to it. So yeah, listeners, if you're confused about what the episodes are going to look like, we are finishing up this last chapter, chapter 24 of the Silmarillion this week. Next week on Tuesday, because Rings of Power, they decided to really throw off my schedule. And they are releasing the first two episodes of Rings of Power at once. So I was like, okay, great. I have to cover two episodes in 1 week. How am I going to do this?
And pretty long episodes.
Yeah. Especially when my episodes release on Tuesdays. So that's a very tight turnaround.
Ooh, yeah, it is.
Even further complicating matters is that I'm going to be at the beach this week. So I won't be like in the privacy of my own home to watch it. I don't even know if I'll be able to watch it the night it comes out. I might have to wait until I'm back home on Saturday. So who knows? Anyway.
Gosh. That's stressful.
Yeah, it's very stressful. We'll figure it out. It's fine. Actually, I say we'll figure it out. I have figured it out. According to a Twitter poll, people showed a preference for one episode of That's What I'm Talking About per episode of Rings of Power. So rather than covering the first two in the first week of our coverage, on Tuesday will be the episode on the first episode of Rings of Power. And then on Thursday, I will release an episode for episode two. And then we'll be on to one episode of That's What I'm Talking About per week. So if anyone's marking their calendars, no one is marking their calendars. But before all of that excitement, we have this excitement.
Yes.
This is The Voyage of Arendelle. I think I'm saying that right. If I'm not, I don't care. Steve Colbert can come and yell at me. And The War of Wrath.
Steve Colbert. He actually said it wrong. That's what I hear. That was what the whole beef was about. He called out Wizard Way Chris in front of everybody. And they were right. It's Arendelle. He had the emphasis in the wrong spot. So I'm on Team Chris in the Arendelle.
Team Chris. Team Chris. We're all Team Wizard Way Chris. Yes. Who may or may not be making an appearance on this podcast again soon. Ooh. Let's back up everything just a smidge. Doriath destroyed. Gondolin destroyed. And both of their groups of refugees have met one another. I think they're in, do you know where they are?
Is it Avernian?
I don't know. This isn't me like quizzing you. Yeah. This is me being like, I don't remember. I believe
that's how it is said. My issue is the pronunciation of all of these words. I believe it is Avernian. It's where Elrond and Elros are like born and raised.
Okay. Point is that they're not in Gondolin or Doriath anymore because those places are destroyed. Right. And Idril and Tuar have left, and Arendelle grows up, and Elwing, the daughter of Dior, who is the son of Baron and Luthien.
Yes. There we go.
And remember,
all the family trees. This is the point in which all of those insanely complicated, long family trees all come to a point. They all meet.
This is when I was like, okay, so isn't this how Arwen and Aragorn are technically like cousins? And yes. So I was trying to like map out their lineage in my head because, and so I was just like, you know what? This is hurting my brain.
You can just like on you know, Wikipedia, you can just keep like clicking backwards and backwards and backwards. This is how Arwen is related to both lines of the half elven. So there's two in this time period, there's two like marriages of elves and men, Baron and Luthien and Idril and Tuor. And Baron and Luthien, you know, Dior and then Elwing, and then Idril and Tuor Arendelle. So they have the half elven, Arwen at least has the half elven on like both sides.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Their children do. So like Aragorn comes from the Elros line, and then Arwen comes from the Elrond line.
Yeah.
Very complicated.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. I say that and it's in the first sentence. So, so Arendelle and Elwing are married and they have two sons, Elrond and Elros. And I was like, hey, I know that guy. I know this
one. It's actually a name that is the person you know of, and not just a name that Tolkien has reused and rename somebody else or name somebody twice.
Yes, not to be confused with Denethor. I think there's a Boromir.
I think there's two Ecthelion.
Yeah, there's Ecthelion.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is actually the same person that you are thinking of when you hear the name.
Oh,
for what?
Finally. Arendelle, however, is very upset because he has heard nothing of his parents' tour in Idril. And he decides that he is going to travel out and find them, and that he is going to bring to the Valar the message of elves and men that should move their hearts to pity for the sorrows of Middle-earth.
Lofty goals here.
Yeah.
He's really setting some high bars for himself.
especially considering, like, not even, like, elves can make it over there, and he's a half elf, even though he is like the most beautiful half elf ever. They make sure to mention. But it's an important distinction that he wants to bring the message of elves and men, because previously Manwë had refused to come help because Olmo only pleaded on behalf of the elves and not the men. So I'm like, okay, I see what's happening here. Arendil's going to be the one. He's going to go over, bring this message. And that's what I was like, the voyage. Okay, got that. That's in the chapter title. And I'm assuming that'll lead to a war of wrath. So Arendil is like, he's like sailing around the world, kind of going on like cool adventures. This is his like pirate era. I don't know, but like he's sailing around. He leaves behind Elwing. And I'm like, how dare you? Like, take her with you on your pirate adventures. You guys can be Will Smith and Elizabeth Swann. Maybe the kids too. Oh, fine, I guess.
I feel like the whole like familial structure and relationships of elves is like so unrelatable to me, and like I can't understand leaving these people behind. But it's like, well, you're immortal. Like, it's not like I'm losing all this time with you. It's like they can just be together forever. Like, what's a couple years or however long? Because he's like, well, we're both immortal. What's some time apart?
This is true. Yeah, it's not like you're missing like your children's, you know, like coming of age, because they're going to be like children for another like 500 years or something.
However long. I don't even think Tolkien knew the lifespan of how that worked.
That's something that I've had questions about like ever since I started Lord of the Rings, was like, okay, so if elves can have babies, but they're also immortal, like how do they age?
How do they age? What are their like years of fertility? Because they're like adults so long. Like, do they get older? When do they become fertile? How long are they pregnant? Like, there's so many biological questions that are just never.
Yeah,
they are never.
And also, like, you know, you see Galadriel, and we know she's. She's ages old.
Yeah.
And it's not like, she's aged into like an old grandmother. She still looks, you know, 30.
Yeah. Nothing about that is clear.
And yet, I mean, then again, this is also the movie's depiction of these characters. And Elrond looks older than Galadriel, but he is much younger than her. So, like, do they just get to pick an age that they stop physically aging?
Like, possibly it could just be, like, they kind of – and also, like, the Rings of Power is also going to throw a little bit of conversation as well, because Celebrimbor is kind of – he looks more like 50 or 60 – and then they've cast younger actors for Elrond and Galadriel too. So there's a little bit of, I feel like it's, they're using the fact that Tolkien did not ever state specifically, to my knowledge, this to their advantage, and casting, you know, leaving it more open for casting and the ages of actors, because it's really never clear like what their aging lifetime kind of looks like.
And yet we have, like, you know, detailed descriptions of, like, how this tree came to grow, you know? But we don't know how the elves age.
Right. We don't know how they age. We don't know, like, what their whole, like, familial structures, fertility, all of that stuff. Like, it's never made any sense. Like, if you can just have kids for thousands of years, like, why do most of them only have, like, one or two?
I don't know. It depends on how long they're pregnant for, because maybe they're pregnant for years, and I don't think I would want to be pregnant for years.
I believe there is some, like, somewhere Tolkien wrote, I remember reading about, that they are pregnant for 9 years, but I think he also contradicted that every once in a while. So I don't know if that's like canon true. I really hope it's not, because even if you live forever, I still wouldn't want to spend 9 years of that.
Oh my gosh. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, can you imagine?
Man, poor.
And especially for like elves who had lots of children.
Yeah,
like,
poor the mother, mother of the like, sons of Feanor. The wife of Feanor.
Yes, the mother of the sons of Feanor. That poor lady.
Whatever her name is. Do we even know her name? Oh no.
We do know her name. We know her name. I don't wife have it memorized. So crazy.
Feanor. Nerdenel.
Feanor's mother is, yes. But she just had Feanor, and then it's the other wife that has the rest of them.
No, that's... No, she... Nerdenel is the wife of Feanor. Feanor is the one who... Finwë had the first wife who had Feanor.
Uh-huh.
And then died.
Yes.
And then the other two, and then another wife had, what are the other two guys? Fingolfin and Finarfin. Wow. I'm pulling this out of the recesses of my brain.
Feanor's mother is Muriel.
Muriel, yes.
Muriel. And then the rest of their mother is Indis.
Okay.
So Indis is the one who has all of the rest of the kids, all of Feanor's half siblings, like Fingolfin, Finarfin.
No, it's just the two.
There's daughters, but the daughters are like not.
There were daughters?
The daughters not, yes, there are daughters. She had 1, 2, 3.
And then Nerdenel had, yeah, the 7. Something.
Yes.
We're like
Nerdenel
really going
is
into
the wife of Feanor, and who has siblings. Like Hydros and Naglor. And she had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
He had Findis and looks like Irame are
daughters.
So yeah, sisters of Feanor. Okay. Anyway, we just went down the family tree. So
it's so easy. You just get sucked in, and there's so many. Things. All their names start with F.
Oh my gosh. Still to this day, I could not tell you which one is Finrod and which one is Fingon because I've mixed them up so frequently. I know one of them is Galadriel's brother, and like one of somewhere
Finrod
along the way they became
is Galadriel's
one.
Brother. Finrod is Galadriel's brother.
Okay. Anyway, okay, so we shall actually, speaking of all of these guys, the sons of Feanor, what are they up to these days? So having just pillaged Doriath,
of course,
they're sitting in there, and they know that Elwing, they somehow, like, word gets to them that Elwing has the Silmaril, who, and she has been keeping it safe while, like, she has possession of it while Arendelle has been out on his pirate adventure. And so it says that Maedhros was repenting of the deeds in Doriath withheld his hand, but in time the knowledge of their oath unfulfilled returned to torment him and his brothers.
Yes.
So first it just kind of makes me laugh where it's like, okay, so he's repenting of his deeds in Doriath, and I'm like, but what does that look like? Is that just him sitting there being internally like, wow, maybe that wasn't such a good thing that we did. I feel bad about that. Okay, I've repented, you know, like.
Yeah, it's not really clear. To me, I interpret that as like he's, I don't know, meditating, praying, you know, something. Like he's trying to change. And also the oath is also like I think Dawn mentioned in an earlier episode, like elf magic is sort of like, like it kind of everything goes
right.
So the oath is not just like, you know, he said, all right, dad, like I'll fulfill this for you. Like it's some sort of like innate magical thing that like no matter how hard he tries, he cannot escape from. It's like ingrained, or it's like a destiny type of thing that he can't fight, which is very interesting.
Right. It's constantly pulling them back in, no matter how much they want to, you know, live normally. And so they send word to Elwing and these elves and say, hey, we know you have the Silmaril. It'd be real chill if you gave it to us.
And she's like, no.
She's like,
why did I do that?
It's kind of mine.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is the Silmaril that her grandfather like wrested from Morgoth himself. Well, he lost a hand over it. Like, she's not just gonna give it up. This is like a familial thing that she's been holding on to.
Yes. And so came to pass the last and cruelest of the slayings of elf by elf. And that was the third of the great wrongs achieved by the accursed oath. So
yeah, literally just throws in there casually a third kin slaying.
Just a third kin slaying.
After everything else.
I was kind of shocked that there was a second kin slaying, but a third one.
Right. A third is
that's pretty bad.
Especially after Maedhros has just repented. Like, hold on, what happened there?
It's that oath. It's that pesky little oath.
Yeah. So like all of these poor elves that survived the siege of Gondolin and Doriath, they've like found this nice little spot at the mouth of the River Sirion. They're just hanging out, and then they think they've made it. They think they've survived, and then nope, here come the Sons of Feanor once again.
Yeah, can you imagine? You're a survivor of the second kinslaying, and you're like, well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. Like, I'm glad that never has to happen again, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then,
like, not long after. Like, I believe that Eärendil escapes the Siege of Gondolin when he's, like, 7 years old. So, and he's, like, you know, an adult now. Like, it's not, like, since, you know, the first kinslaying. Yeah. Like, not much passed. Since the second one,
maybe like 20, 25 years. And like, especially in terms of like the elven timeline, that's nothing.
Right. Nothing. Like a minute.
Yeah.
And they're like already back at it again. Yeah.
So the third kinslaying happens. Yikes. And Elrond and Elros are taken captive. And Elwing protects the Silmaril from the Sons of Feanor by grabbing it and throwing herself off a cliff.
Yes. Which is like so traumatic. And also, like, can you imagine if Elrond and Elros were like there? I mean, the timeline is unclear, but like were they already kidnapped, or were they like in the process of being kidnapped, and they're like seeing, they're like being taken away by these strangers, and then their mother is like presumably dead. Like, this is the beginning of a very long and traumatic life for Elrond in particular.
I'm so interested, and that's why, like, I'm, you know, looking forward to the show, obviously. I'm so interested to see like what's up with the life of Elrond, because so much of like my opinions of him are colored by the movies, which add a lot to his character that I didn't care for. But like Elrond is a character that I don't really care about. And then I haven't watched all of the trailers and teasers, because they're like all of a sudden within like the last few weeks, there was so much stuff that was coming out. And I just,
oh my gosh, I couldn't even keep up with that. Yeah. Every day there was a trailer or a clip or something.
Yeah.
Photo.
But there was one trailer where Elrond and Galadriel are speaking.
You have not seen what I've seen.
I have seen my share.
You have not seen what I have seen.
She's like, I've seen three kinslings now. You were only alive for one.
Yeah, I think it's fair, but I also do feel like Elrond, at least maybe not yet at that point, but like, he's got some things coming for him.
Yeah, that's true.
That may arrive.
So, but anyway, yeah. So I'm really interested to see, like, you know, here he is as a little boy, and just interested to see what happens to this guy.
Yeah, I was never an Elrond girly, but I think I'm going to become one.
I think we all are. Yeah,
I think I'm going to become one, and I'm very curious to see, like, if without, you know, directly mentioning a lot of this stuff that they may not be able to, like, how this will play into the portrayal of Elrond. I would be surprised if it didn't kind of color a little bit of his portrayal of Elrond.
Yeah. Where were we? Oh, right. Elwing has just thrown herself
off
the cliff.
She's in the sea.
luckily, Olmo, the only Valar, he is carrying the weight of all.
He is carrying all of them.
On their shoulders. Manwë Hu? Olmo. is the best one of all of them.
Oh, yes.
He bears Elwing up out of the sea and basically turns her into a giant bird. And she flies around and everyone's like, oh my God, look at that beautiful bird. What?
She goes to find her hubby.
Yes. And she lands on his ship. And can you just imagine
like a giant bird coming at yes. you.
And Arendelle this whole time has, before the kinslaying happened, he like had this feel, this like bad feeling, so he started heading back home, but he didn't make it in time to help everyone. So he has this bad feeling, you know, that something's going to happen, and he's on his way home, and then his wife drops out of the sky as a bird, and I'm assuming she transforms back into herself.
Yes, she does.
And then says, what's left of our, like, refugee home is destroyed. Most of our people are dead. Our sons have been taken.
And what does he do? He goes, all right, let's keep going. Let's keep trying to find Valinor. Let's not go get our boys.
I know. That is kind of surprising. I think he says, yeah, it says he saw no hope left in the lands of Middle Earth. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess at this point, they could also just be assuming that their sons are dead.
Which is very, very harrowing.
I think it even just mentions at first that Elwing and Elros and Elrond are lost. And then it goes into details that Elrond and Elros have been taken captive. And then, you know, this whole thing that happened to Elwing. So I guess they just think that they're dead.
It's not clear if Arendelle and Elwing know that they're okay, but Tolkien does tell us that, like, they fear that they have been slain, but it was not so.
Mm-hmm.
That Maglor takes pity on them and tries his best to love him despite this all-powerful consuming oath that he has taken.
Right. Yeah, let's check in on the Sons of Feanor, speaking of Maglor. Previously in an episode, I had said that all of the Sons of Feanor were still alive. At that point, the three C's, hang on, let me flip back to my
Caligorm, Caranthir, and Cudafin.
Caranthir, that's it, yes. They had all died in Doriath. I'd forgotten about that. And then in this battle, Amrod and Amros are slain. So at this point, it's just Maedhros and Maglor left. And yes, we do have moments of showing that Maglor is like the weight of the oath is really pulling on him, and it's tiring him, and he doesn't want to do this anymore, and he is so like sickened by everything that they've done, and so he's like really feeling it. And yes, it does mention that he takes care of the boys and that they all kind of like show love for each other too. And so at least, you know, even though they've been kidnapped, at least it's nice to know that like they're being taken care of.
Yes, it's not like worst case, but you know, could have been better.
It could be worse. Could be a lot better, but it could be a lot worse too. What are their names? Arendelle and Elwing are traveling now into the West. And there were all of these protections that the Valar had put up around like the coasts and the islands and like mysterious fog that would like make people get lost or crash into rocks probably, or, you know, become, you know, enchanted and become like mentally lost.
Full of booby traps.
Yes.
Just full of booby traps.
Booby trap galore. Just imagine the Goonies.
Like, they do not want you to get there.
Yeah. But from what I understand is that they have the Silmaril with them, and so they are able to pass through all of this, and they make it to Valinor, and
it essentially just grows brighter and brighter and kind of allows them to pass more peacefully, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Everyone at this point, there it's like some party or festival or something, so mostly everyone is up in the city, like the main city that the Valar live in, rather than like down there where the Teleri are and Tyrion and everything, like it's all deserted.
That makes him very nervous. He's like, oh, something bad happened here, because he's like walking through these like big cities and there's nobody there.
Yeah. And I also wonder, like, it doesn't really mention, like, when he goes through Tyrion, it doesn't really mention him thinking about Gondolin, but like Gondolin was made in the image of Tyrion. Like that was Turgon's goal. So, yeah. It could be, you know, he was young when Gondolin was destroyed. So maybe he doesn't remember much, but like, it would have been interesting if there had just been a little note of like, and he saw like what the real thing was like.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And he at first tells Elwing to just stay down by the shore So at first he says,
this is my mission.
Yeah. So he's so like dramatic about it.
Yeah, he's always trying to leave people behind.
He says, no. Here none but myself shall set foot, lest you fall under the wrath of the Valar. But that peril I will take on myself alone, for the sake of the two kindreds. And then Elwing is like, no.
Yeah.
Nice try.
I mean, it is kind of nice. Like, he's saying, like, if they're really pissed that we're here, like, let them just be mad at me and not all mad at you.
Yeah, that's true. They don't, I wonder like how much they know about what exactly the Silmaril is. Like, do they know that it is the light of the trees of Valinor? And like, because, you know, so much time has passed and so many like kinslings have happened.
Yeah.
So like, because from my perspective reading it, I'm like, oh, if I was walking into Valinor and I had one of the Silmarils, I would be like, hello, where's my red carpet?
Yeah.
But they don't, they might not know that. They're very unsure of how the Valar are going to take their arrival. So the three guys who they like rode over with stay on the ship. Elwing and Erendil go onto shore, but he does make her stay down by the shore, and he goes up north to Tiniquetil, the mountaintop that everyone is partying at, basically. So he goes up and he runs into Eonwe, who is the herald of Manwë. And this guy becomes like suddenly very important in this chapter.
Yes.
And we've like never heard of him beforehand. He probably has shown up beforehand, but
all of a sudden he has a role to play. He's got lines.
Yes. Now. Yeah. He has a name and lines now. Yeah. I think previously if he was mentioned, it was just like the herald of Manwë.
Yeah.
And like all of a sudden he's a very important character in this chapter. So just keep that in mind. So he finds, what's his name, Erendil, and brings him up to Manwë, and there Erendil like tells his story and delivers the errand of the two kindreds, and he asks pardon for the Noldor, which I don't exactly understand, like how that can, like I feel like that doesn't work, because like he's not at all related to, well no he is, but like he's not related to the sons of Feanor, and like it's mostly their doing, you know, and so I guess like kind of by extension he can ask for pardon, but like he's at this point like two generations removed from of that, so
I think it's more just the fact that he's being unselfish about it. He's coming from a selfless place, and as a representative of elves and men, this is why they do not just immediately smite him, I guess.
Yeah, great point. So Manwë says that he will be judged at the mercy of either men or elves. And he will have to like pick a side. And if he, you know, chooses men, I guess he'll go back over to Middle Earth and fight. And if he chooses elves, he can stay in Valinor. He goes down and gets Elwing, who has been partying with the Teleri, and she's like made friends with them. They go up there. And I love this, that Erendil lets Elwing choose first, that it's not like the husband choosing and then she just does whatever he does.
Yes. He lets suicide for the both of them.
Yes. Elwing chooses to be judged among the firstborn children of Iluvatar because of Luthien. And for her sake, Erendil chose alike. So I love that. But also because it says that if it had just been his choice, he probably would have chosen the men because his heart.
He would have picked men.
Yeah. His heart was like closer to that of his father and the peoples of his father. I just love that because we don't like the bar is like so low for like the Silmarillion and like there's just like not a lot of, I don't know, agency for women in this book. And so it's nice to see like this moment of like Elwing kind of taking charge and her husband going along with it.
Yes. I do love that.
Erendil then gets like the coolest thing ever that I was just like, what is happening?
Right.
So their ship, it just says that the three men that were on the ship, it just says the Valar drove them away into the east with a great wind. So they just
like, and they just like blew them away, like tumbled across the sea.
At first I didn't remember how they got like off the ship and back over to Beleriand because it does mention that that happened. And I was like, oh, I guess like maybe Olmo did it. But no, it just says that the Valar drove them away with a great wind.
I would love to know his reasoning behind that solution to the problem. But I mean, okay. Yeah.
He was like, I want this ship. Yeah. We need this ship. It's very important. Oh, which... side note, if it's like important for anyone, like the little Easter eggs or something, I believe this is one of the ships that was made by Círdan or something. Yeah, so
yeah,
and he is.
There's a part where like Erendil goes and befriends Círdan and
yeah,
the ship with him. But then give up.
So it's a pretty nifty ship. I don't know. All I'm imagining is like Peter Pan. Did you ever watch the live like action?
The live action.
Peter Pan with Jeremy Sumpter and everyone everyone loved like that was everyone's like first crush was Peter Pan in that movie.
Yes.
Anyway, just imagining just like pixie dust and like stars speckled around a boat and it's just like flying just through the air and then the music from that movie is playing. Lifted up into the skies and like surrounded by starlight. It says it was filled with a wavering flame, pure and bright. And Erendil the Mariner sat at the helm, glistening with dust of elven gems. And the Silmaril was bound upon his brow, which I'm kind of like, I feel like it should go to Elwing, but okay. it was her family's, but
yeah,
all right.
We had the small triumph for women. Now we're
take it down a notch. Uh-huh. He like journeys through the sky and everyone sees him at sunrise and sunset, and he comes back into Valinor flying from around his journeys around the skies of the world. And and then it says Elwing does not go with him, but I guess her like brief moment as a bird really sparked some love for birds inside of her. And so she goes down, says the borders of the sundering seas, and she stays there and like learns to talk to the birds.
They teach her
the craft of flight, and her wings were of white and silver gray. And sometimes she goes and flies with Erendil. So this is like wild.
She can't go with him everywhere, but I think when he kind of flies by, she goes and flies up to meet him and spend some time with him.
Yeah. They're living like their best, I don't know, Neverland Peter Pan life.
Yes.
So over in Beleriand, Maglor and Maedhros see Erendil and they see the Silmaril in the sky and they're like, okay, so it's up there. Like,
is that one Silmaril? Kind of looks like it.
Yeah. And this is when they kind of start having this conversation about like, I don't think we're ever going to get the Silmarils. Like, I don't know what's going to, like, I don't think, or at least Maglor is like really having some doubts being like, maybe we just let it go.
He's like, now if it's up there, Then he says, then let us be glad, for its glory is seen now by many and is yet secure from all evil. So he's like, all right, this is best scenario. Everybody can enjoy it and it's safe from Morgoth.
Yes. Like, win-win. And speaking of Morgoth, that's the segue I was looking for. It says, he looked not for the assault that came upon him, for so great was his pride become that he deemed that none would ever again come with open war against him. Which, like, I can't say I would disagree with that thinking, considering, like all of the battles and war that he's wrought.
Yeah.
He's been the definite winner in the last couple battles.
Probably feeling all high and mighty, kind of secure in his rule, reign.
Yes.
Over things. Like, nobody's going to come challenge me anymore.
And then over in Valinor, armies are rising. And I was like, yes finally, we're doing something about the Morgoth problem. Finally.
And it's like a big deal because the Vanyar and the Noldor that had remained with Finarfin, who had decided not to come to Middle Earth, and then some of the Teleri even go to war. And like the Vanyar, if you don't remember, like once they are called to Valinor, like their whole host stays there. Like they don't ever have any parts of their people that stay in Middle Earth. They all go. So the fact that like there are Vanyar that are marching on Middle Earth is a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm. Finarfin, who is the third son of Finwë, who stayed behind of the Noldor, so him and the rest of the Noldor that were that remained in Valinor, they rally. The Teleri originally were not willing to go, and I don't blame them because they were like, hey, we had a kinslaying problem. We're not about to go to war. But Elwing kind of rallies them because she is the daughter of Dior. And
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Let me go back in my brain. And Luthien is the daughter of Thingol, and Thingol
is the brother of the king of the Teleri.
Yes. I think that's one of the parts that when I was reading it last night, I was like, okay, remind me how she's one of them.
it goes back so far. But yes, Thingol was originally Elu.
Yeah.
Whose brother Olwë ended up going.
Yes. Yeah. And he got distracted by Melian along the way. And they all go over. It mentions that the Teleri board their ships and they make it over to the sea, but they don't go fight on land.
They just stay. They're just there. They're just the ferry. They run the ferries.
Yeah.
They were like, we'll take you over there in our nice fancy ships, but we still don't want to have a foot in this game because we're still
traumatized. We've already lost a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
They march upon Middle Earth and the meeting of the hosts of the West and of the North is named the Great Battle and the War of Wrath. Yeah, it's pretty insane. I won't like go into all the details, but it's all, you know, pretty epic scale.
Lots of people are involved. Edendil comes back and fights the biggest, worst dragon, and Caligon the Black slays the dragon.
Also, something that I just thought was funny, it mentions some of the men fighting and that some of the men were fighting with the enemy, and the elves do not forget it.
I have that underlined in my copy because that is very relevant to the rest of the universe after this.
Yes. And like, I know in the movie when Elrond says, like, I was there the day, like, 5,000 years ago when the strength of men failed. I know he's not referring to this, but, like, it comes to mind, you know?
It does. Where it's like, they've been burned many times before.
Yeah.
Hudson.
Yeah, and then in walks like Aragorn, and he's like, "I'm the hope of the future of these of the land, but I'm also a little boy right now." So,
right.
Oh my god. Anyway, I'll have to link it in my bio, but there's this artist on Twitter who does these comics of like Elrond, like Aragorn when he was young, like being raised in Rivendell, and the first.
That's so cute.
The first panel is, you know, that vine that's, what do you have? A knife. No.
Oh, I've seen this. I've literally
they,
seen
like,
that.
Recreated it with Elrond and like little Aragorn, and I died. So anyway.
Yes, it's so cute.
Insane battle. Crazy. And we win. Yay. Thunderous applause.
Yes.
They go in and they, you know, strike down Morgoth, and they chain him with the same chain that he had on when he was imprisoned in Valinor. And they like kick off the crown and take the Silmarils, and the Silmarils are given to Eonwë, the herald of Manwë. Yeah. And I'm like, why are they not just given to Manwë? Why are they not just given to like this guy's suddenly gotten a very important position. So that night, everyone's camping, rallying to go back to Valinor tomorrow. Maedhros and Maglor have like a big conversation together.
Because they will not, they don't want to go back. Like Eonwë basically, as the herald of Manwë, summoned all of the elves of Beleriand to go back and depart Middle-earth. But Maedhros and Maglor will not go, despite, you know, the weariness of the oath and everything.
And they also, of course, still want the Silmarils.
Yes. So they once again, they ask for them back.
They're like, can we have them? And he answers that the right to the work of their father, which the sons of Feanor formerly possessed, had now perished because of their many and merciless deeds, being blinded by their oath, and most of all, because of their slaying of Dior and the assaults upon the Havens. I wonder if they know about that third kinslaying, just because it didn't come up then. They're like, y'all don't know about that one.
Like, we just won't tell them about that.
Don't tell them. Like, it's not going to make our case any better. Maedhros and Maglor have this like really important, like very just interesting conversation I found, where Maglor is like, you can tell he's tired and he's just ready to give up, and he's like, don't you think it's time, bro?
Yeah. Well, because his heart was sorrowful. Like, you kind of feel for him that he does feel like they have, you know, done wrong deeds. Yeah. And it's like, if we go back, like, we could be forgiven and we shall have the peace that we have not known in many, many years.
Yeah. And he's like, and don't you think, like, if Manwë and Varda forgive us, I think that'll be enough to like break this oath. I think like the oath will be satisfied with that. Like, I think we can finally, rest. And Maedhros is just like, no matter what happens, I don't think any amount of forgiveness, I don't think anything is going to release us from this oath. Like, isn't this what, like, this is what we promised our father. Like, this is what we're supposed to do. I don't think this is what is supposed to happen. And so, like, it's this moment where I feel like, oh my God, Maglor is winning Maedhros over. They're gonna repent and go back and get forgiveness. Nope. So later that night,
he just yielded to the will of Maedhros.
Yes. Yeah, like your older brother just being like, shut up and do it.
Yeah.
I'm the oldest. This is what I say.
Yeah. So they devise this plot.
They sneak into camp, and they kill the guards that are watching the Silmarils, and I'm like, oh man, you guys were so like, you were so close. Like, I was reading that conversation and I'm like, oh wow, look at them like turning this around. And then it's like, nope, more murder.
But they still don't, like, even though they were almost forgiven, they kill all these guards, and then the guards want to fight back. Eonwë still will not allow them to be slain.
Yes, he shows them.
So I was like, bruh.
Yeah, he shows them this, like, bit of mercy that they have never shown anyone, really. And he's like...
But is it... I see this is interesting, because it seems like mercy, like, he would not permit the slaying. But then, you know, obviously what happens next is, like, maybe he kind of knew what was going to happen next. and what their fate would be. And so he was like, you know what? If you guys don't want to be forgiven, I don't want you to like get the easy way out by dying. I want you to have to like suffer, essentially.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a really like interesting perspective to think that like he knew what would happen.
What happens next is more suffering.
So they, yeah, so Anway lets them go. I was kind of viewing this as like, we're not going to let this turn us into them. We're going to take the high road here, yeah. You know. They take the Silmarils and they say like, wow, isn't like, what a great convenience that, you know, like there were seven of us and there was only three Silmarils. Like there was no way that we were going to split them up between all of us. So I think it's meant to be that there's the two of us left and there's two Silmarils.
I can see this right on the precipice. Like they're saying this as they're reaching out for the Silmarils. Yes. And then
they're like, it's meant to be. This is everything coming together for us. So they grab the Silmarils and of course they are burned by them and caused like intense suffering and pain. Maedhros throws himself into a gaping chasm filled with fire. And so ended. Mm-hmm. And the Silmaril that he bore was taken into the bosom of the earth. And Maglor also could not endure the pain. And he cast it at last into the sea, and thereafter he wandered ever upon the shores, singing in pain and regret beside the waves. And so it came to pass that the Silmarils found their long homes, one in the airs of heaven, and one in the fires of the heart of the world, and one in the deep waters.
I just love that. I think that's such a fitting end.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is kind of sad. Maglor's ending, it does tug at the heartstrings a little because you know how hard he tried, like twice essentially, to get away from this fate, but it would not be.
That pesky oath.
I know.
It's not going to let the sons of Feanor live or die peacefully. So.
And they've all returned to these, you know, like elemental homes.
Yes. And it's funny because like as I was, you know, nearing the end of this chapter, I was like, so where are the Silmarils? I was thinking about it in terms of like, you know, like in the timeline of like Lord of the Rings. And like, I'm like, so like, where are they? Where'd they go? What happened to them? And so I guess this is what happened to them. And I don't know if they ever pop up again. If they do, interesting. But like, it's just so crazy that like this dumb book is all about these dumb rocks.
And then they just get tossed. The one in the sea always interested me because of specifically when they're talking about in The Lord of the Rings and the Council of Elrond what to do about the ring, and somebody suggests like throwing it into the ocean. Gandalf is like, no, that would never work. Like Sauron would literally raise the world to the ground looking for the ring, even if it wasn't like, it's eventually someday it would wash ashore and Sauron would come get it. So I'm like, well, why does that never happen in the Silmaril? Like, why does the Silmaril never wash up on the shore?
So the one in the air, in the sky, Arendelle has one is just one is seemingly destroyed in the fire. Yeah, that one in the ocean, I would imagine it's like the like end credit scene of Jumanji where it washes up on a shore in like Africa or India or something, and you see like children like running towards it as like the story begins again. We need that with the Silmaril, you know. It washes up on the shores and then Merry and Pippin pick it up. Oh my gosh. I could see it happening. Oh my gosh. Tolkien missed out on an excellent storytelling opportunity. Wow.
Right. I wish he just said something like Olmo took it and placed it in the deepest trench in the deepest part, you know, like something that made it a little, like he says deep waters, but I don't know. That's not good enough for me.
Yeah, same. So for the most part, everyone goes back over to Valinor. Morgoth is thrust through the door of night beyond the walls of the world into the timeless void. So metal.
Yeah.
Love that.
That is like.
And Erendil kind of like keeps watch over this area from the skies. So yeah, mostly everyone came back over except for Círdan, the shipwright, Celeborn, and Galadriel, as well as Gil-galad, the High King, and Elrond and Elros. Like their parents, Elrond and Elros are asked to choose, like, okay, who are you going to side with, men or elves? And Elrond chooses the elves, and Elros chooses the men.
Yes, the second of his traumas.
I can't imagine, being like, so does that mean you're going to die? Like, am I
going to
die, bro?
Yeah, like, his life will be so, like, infinitely shorter. And they've already lost their parents. So, like, you know, you're basically orphaned, been kidnapped. Your surrogate dads are also dead. So they've been orphaned twice now.
Yeah.
And then now he's lost his brother.
Yeah. I guess we'll see how that plays out in the show.
Right.
So when it's mentioning like Galadriel and Celeborn over, you know, over in Middle Earth and stuff. So maybe, granted, there's still these two more sections, Akalabeth and of the Third Age. And of course, ironically, of the Rings of Power. and we'll see what that's all about. So it could still happen in these last two sections, but I thought Beleriand just, like, falls underwater. So, obviously, at this point, it's still here. I guess we'll see what happens. Right? More to come? Question mark? I don't know. Uh-huh. So, Morgoth is, he's thrust into that timeless void. It's like, and it's a happy ending, you know? Like, evil was destroyed. The good guys prevailed. Everyone's safe. Except,
But he puts this... puts the little asterisk there.
I love it. I love that kind of stuff.
It's like, it's so ominous. Like, after all of this stuff that's happened, to say like the lies of Melkor, the mighty and accursed Morgoth, the power of terror and hate sowed in the hearts of elves and men are a seed that does not die and cannot be destroyed.
Yes.
Like, ooh.
And ever and anon it sprouts anew and will bear dark fruit even unto the latest days.
Yeah. It's like, oh, not a happy ending.
Yeah. And then there's like this little paragraph that says, here ends the Silmarillion, which it doesn't, because there's still, like I said, these two more sections.
Right.
So I love that. They're like, of course, you know, of course we know the ring. We know the One Ring. Yeah. We know Sauron. We know all that stuff is going to happen. So yeah, just this little sprinkle, you know, it's like the end. Or is it? And of course we know. It's not the end. It's far from it.
Oh, yes. He's still got one more story to tell.
Yes.
Because this is just the first age.
He's got two more movie trilogies, one much better than the other, several video games, and an entire supposedly 5-season
television show.
Yeah,
the second age.
Created by one of the richest and least helpful men in the entire world. So, here ends the Silmarillion. Yay!
You did it!
Wow. Gosh.
They crammed so much stuff in that last chapter. I feel like they're just like, he's just like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
All this stuff happens.
Yeah, a lot happened. A lot happened in that book. I don't know, I'm tired.
Kind of stare at the wall for a little bit and be like, process everything.
I am also just so excited for the show, just because now all I have to do for the podcast is watch a TV show. Like, that's so much better than reading the Silmarillion.
I think it is great. Like, I am well aware of how difficult the Silmarillion is to get to. Like, there are diehard Tolkien fans who have been fans for most of their lives that have not gotten through the Silmarillion. So not only should you give yourself a big pat on the back for that, but also this show is going to be so exciting that it'll bring more people into this like epic history without necessarily having to read it. And also convince people like there's going to be things that they don't necessarily state out loud that they kind of hint at, or maybe they drop a name and move on. So it's like, ooh, like what are they hinting at? Like, is that in the Silmarillion? And maybe it'll draw more people in and make it more, you know, accessible and more desirous to read. I know like the Peter Jackson movies helped a lot of people be able to picture those, the world of Tolkien, and makes it easier to read and understand. So I'm hoping that the Rings of Power television show will do the same for the Silmarillion, because I obviously think it's a great book.
And also like, I feel like even though, you know, we like all of us like Tolkien creators and stuff, we've been saying that like, no, you don't have to read The Silmarillion in order to enjoy the show. I feel like this really set the stage, because I have gotten to the like beginning of Elrond's life.
Now you've gotten to where they're actual characters.
And so now, like watching the show, I'm going to get to see like where his life picks up after the end of this chapter, you know? So like here we are where he's just been like sort of orphaned. Like his parents chose to go, like one of them chose to go be a pirate in the sky and the other one is a bird lady. And then his brother has chosen the mortal life of man. So yeah, that's like where we're finding Elrond, and we're finding all of these people after, I'm assuming like maybe a couple, you know, 100 years or maybe ages have passed since this war with Morgoth, but like I know like the history of all that, and like I'm gonna get to see, like I've seen all this stuff that like Galadriel has gone through. Like, you have not seen what I have seen. Yeah. Like, I have seen it now. So I'm excited to see.
It's good to have context.
Yes, yeah.
But I don't think it will be necessary. Yeah, like, I think
totally.
I don't think the showrunners are laboring under the delusion that most of fans have read this book. Like, and honestly, it wouldn't make any sense to cater to that audience. Like, they would be smart to cater to an audience that has not read all of this, so that their show is more accessible to 99%.
Yes, yeah.
The 1% of us that have like read and know all of this stuff.
Us nerds.
It's nice if we like it. It's nice if we like it, and we can kind of watch and be like, ooh, there's some little Easter eggs here and there. But I definitely don't think the show will be made for us, which is a good thing.
Well, Emily, thank you for joining me for this final chapter of The Silmarillion.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored.
Do you feel, I feel better that I had to, that I got to have you back for a much better chapter than chapter 14 of The Realms of Valyria.
I appreciate it.
Hopefully you feel better too.
I hope I lived up to my name. I feel like I can't not, you know, live up to it.
Your love and positivity for The Silmarillion definitely comes through. Where can people find you on the internet, and is there anything you want to share with the audience, like if there's any, I don't know, anything you want to plug or anything you've been working on?
You can find me on TikTok and Twitter and Instagram at SilmarEmily. I post a variety of things, so just as long as you love Tolkien and are along for the ride, I think there'll be something that you will enjoy.
Yes. Yeah. Listeners, if you've made it to this point in this episode of this podcast, hopefully you like Tolkien, and hopefully you like, if you like my sense of humor, you'll definitely like Emily's stuff that she does on TikTok. And
There are many things like you do that I've either almost done or I've like gotten ready to do, and I'm like, oh, she did it first.
Yes, I've seen it. Yeah, there have been a few times where the opposite has happened, where I'm like, I there's a sound that I'm like, oh, I have an idea for what to do for this, and then I've gotten like so lazy with TikTok lately where I'm like, I can't be bothered to like stand up off my couch and make a 5-second clip. And then I'm scrolling and I'm like, ah, she did it.
Yes. Like, we always have like the same, like if it's like a sound or a trend or something, I feel like we always like have of the same mind about it.
Yes. That's What I'm Talking About is a proud member of WBNE. If you want to learn more about the network, you can go to WBNE.org. The cover art is by Vaishon Brandon. You can support him on Instagram at Vaishon Designs. If you want to get merch for That's What I'm Talking About, you can go to tpublic.com/user/talkingaboutpod. Follow the podcast on social media at TalkingAboutPod, and follow me on Twitter at MCWhatsUp and on Instagram at MCTurnDownForWhat. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/talkingaboutpod and join whatever tier speaks to your heart. I appreciate every little bit of support you give, so I don't care which tier you join. But this week, we are giving a shout out to our newest patron, Matthew. Matthew, thank you so much for becoming a patron of the superstar tier. That's not actually what it's called, but you are a superstar for showing your support for this podcast, which I am just so blown away every time I have another patron, another person in the world who wants to show their support. So thank you so, so much. Well, thank you again for coming on. Do you have any parting words for the audience?
I hope that this, you know, enhanced your experience, whether you read The Silmarillion yourself or you experienced it along with Mary Clay. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're excited for the show. I hope it's good. I hope it brings something new, brings new people into Tolkien.
And that's what I'm talking about.